The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. 4 minutes past nine, Wednesday, the 30th of August, 2023. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed. You're welcome along. Good to have you on board for another 3 hours of the 9 till noon show here on Highland Radio. And it's a busy one. We've got a lot to break down, not least the Electoral Commission announcing that Donegal is going to stay as a five-seater with a little bit of the bottom of the county, but not insignificant, remaining part of Sligo Leitrim. I think that's come as a bit of a surprise to many. John McAteer is going to be joining us shortly to go through it. We're going to talk about perhaps maybe too the potential runners and riders in the next general election. What impact will this have on Sinn Féin's aspirations? Can Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael retain their representation? What difference might the emergence of a 100% Regis political party have on the whole state of affairs? We want you involved in the conversation as well, because you out there are as much experts as anyone else. 086 60 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. As someone who just happens to be in Sligo Leitrim, literally on the borderline, personally, it's quite an annoyance for me, because arguably there isn't enough of a population that could be organised in such a way to elect someone from that part of the world that you would feel, you know, that you are genuinely represented in the Dáil. That's no disrespect to those TDs elected in Sligo Leitrim and what have you, but they are a long distance removed. And they themselves, as at least one or two of them, have said the logic would be to return Donegal to a single constituency. But anyway, be that as it may, they say they couldn't do it because to do so would cock up the figures or something to that effect. But anyway, we'll get to that. We'll run through what's on the front of and inside some of the newspapers today. We'll start with the locals. And a woman has been charged with the murder of a man whose body was found in the water off Sleaveleague. Nikita Burns was hauled before a special sitting of Letterkenny District Court on Tuesday morning after being charged with the murder of Robert Wilkin. Burns, a 21-year-old with an address at West End Bundoran, appeared for a short hearing before Judge Kieran Liddy. Burns was arrested on Monday morning in Letterkenny and detained at Letterkenny Garda Station under Section 4 of the Criminal Justice Act of 1984. After questioning, detectives charged Burns with murder. Detective Sergeant Matty Murphy gave evidence of the arrest, charge and caution of Burns. Detective Sergeant Murphy told the court that he charged Burns at 10:21 on Monday, August 28th. After being cautioned, Burns told detectives, "I didn't do it." On to the Finn Valley Voice, a Stranorlar student who received an impressive 8 H1s in this year's Leaving Cert exams plans to study theoretical physics. Kiva Burke has urged students to work hard and do your best if they want to succeed. The Inish Times this morning. Businesses in Buncrana could withhold rates if the town's 30 minutes off free on-street parking is withdrawn. It's been warned. Donegal County Council is exploring abolishing the free on-street parking, which was voted in by councillors in 2006 under a review of the parking regime in the town. The council believes the move would increase income from the charge, the proceeds of which can be spent locally, such as on improvements to the town's streetscapes and footpaths. The council says the on-street parking is operating at a loss, but traders in the town have reacted angrily to the suggestion. They say many businesses rely on the free parking and the loss of it would have a severe impact and see some traders forced to close. On to the Nationals now, and it is almost impossible to comprehend another multi-fatality road traffic collision in County Tipperary, and it happened late yesterday, which means that a lot of the papers have to go to print to get copies to this part of the world, and it's not featured as prominently as it would otherwise be. But again, it's just, there are no words. Three people, including a young child, were killed last night in the latest horror collision on our roads. The crash, which involved one vehicle, happened near the townland of Rath Cown outside Cashel, County Tipperary last night. A man, woman and a young child were confirmed dead at the scene. Two other adult passengers in the car were also injured. One was in a critical condition last night, while another was said to have suffered less severe injuries. And it's emerged since the papers went to publish that the young person, just three, I believe, was a backseat passenger in the car. The two people that died were the child's grandparents, both aged in their 40s, and the child's parents, aged in their 20s, were the front seat passengers. It's understood members of two separate families heard the crash and went out to it before raising the alarm last night. Two fire brigades and an ambulance were quickly on the scene within minutes. Local Fine Gael councillor Declan Burgess said this is another horrible and tragic crash just outside the town of Cashel. So soon after the awful loss of Luke and Grace McSweeney, Nicole Murphy and Zoe Coffey, they died in a crash on Friday in the same county, not too far away from this latest incident. Again, it is just too sad for words. In the Irish Times this morning, we learn, oh, we kind of know this ourselves, but anyway, the cost of a litre of petrol and diesel could soon cross the €2 barrier again as rises in excise duty, a spike in demand and a reduction in the global supply of oil creates a perfect storm, AA Ireland has said. And you know, the real impact of this is obviously the day-to-day costs. But there's lots of you listening out there, either yourselves or family members, that have to travel quite a bit to work, myself included. And, you know, you'd be afraid to add up how much it costs in petrol and diesel, don't you? Because it can be 60, 70, 80. I know some people paying 100, 110 euro to fill a tank, and they're having to do it at least, you know, once or twice every fortnight. And then next thing you know, you're up on a levy of 500 or 600 euro a month just to get to and from work. And that's just in fuel costs. I mean, it's an awful burden for some. This whilst your income is static. Right, so whatever money you have left, this is eating into it. Well, the average cost of motor fuel stands at around 170 a litre at present. There will be a price jump after Friday when the excise duty on a litre of petrol and diesel will climb 7 and 5 cents respectively, as a measure introduced last year to help consumers during the cost of living crisis nears to an end. Minister for Finance Michael McGrath yesterday said this increase was locked in, but that a final planned increase in the tax, which would bring it back to its original level from the end of October, would be kept under review as the government prepares the budget package. Now, what I would be very curious as, because it's clearly there's a number. The government has a number that they think we can afford for a price of the litre of petrol or diesel. Now, I'd be very curious as to what it is. You know, when they're sitting around the table, do they say, well, they can afford 190 or they can afford 2. I'd say 2 is the magical barrier that they think, right, people will pay 195, but 202 is just a bridge too far. I don't know. But I wish there was just a bit more transparency. Like, what is, they're keeping it under review, but what do they see as the upper limit that they think, right, we need to do something now? I suspect it's €2. I wish they would tell us so we know. Rather than treating us like children a little bit. Governments tend to, not this particular government, but governments generally tend to treat us like children. Let us know what is the limit that you go, right, we as a government need to do something. What do you think about raising the upper age limit of on Garda Síochána entry into it? I think the problem here was setting at 35. I don't see the logic of it. I mean, you could have someone who's 45, in excellent shape, who would be perhaps more physically able to do the job than a 22-year-old. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think we're discussing whether or not, or should it go from 35 to 40 or 50. But why was it just set at 35 to begin with? That's what I see as the problem. I can't see any issue at all with fit 40, 50 pluses becoming Gardaí. All right, they might not serve that long, 20 or 10 years or even 5, but we need Gardaí. I think we need Gardaí with experience. And I say, you know what, if there's 40 and 50-year-olds that want to be in the Guards and they're fit and healthy, bring it on. I don't know what you guys think out there. I think, was it Christy Gallagher was on the news saying it smacked of desperation? I don't agree with that at all. I think it was a silly line to draw at 35, personally. Especially when you see people so fit later in life, and then you see others who are less fit much earlier in their lives. Well, the current age limit of 35 for joining on Garda Síochána will significantly increase under Radical Fresh proposals. The new age ceiling is thought likely to land between 45 and 50 years. As all efforts are made to boost the uniformed ranks, the force needs additional personnel across a variety of specialist positions, in addition to requiring regular officers to patrol and station and for station purposes. And I do believe, and this is no disrespect to the new intake, I do believe that they do need a bit of experience in there. And for that reason alone, as there's an exodus from the Gardaí with older guards, I think it would be worthwhile for that. I think there's a reassurance sometimes when someone has a looks a little bit older. That sounds terrible, it sounds ageist, but you know what? It's what people are talking about out there, what people feel. The Irish Daily Mail tells us that a clampdown on classroom influencers is underway, with teachers warned about their responsibilities by the Education Minister. Earlier this year, it emerged that a number of teachers with large social media followings had accepted payments to promote brands and filmed content in school buildings. Now the Teaching Council, the standards body for the profession, has agreed to write to all registered teachers at the behest of Minister Norma Foley. In a letter obtained by the Irish Daily Mail, Ms Foley urged the council to remind teachers of their obligation to avoid conflict between their professional work and private interests, which could reasonably be deemed to impact negatively on the profession, is it? Let's guess, what is it? On pupils and students. Okay, I don't know if there's that many big in number. I'm not sure that's worth a front page, but anyway. The Sun tells us, we know this already, but again, Ireland's childcare crisis is pushing mums out of their jobs, forcing them to modify plans to return to work in favour of staying home with their children. I'm sure this affects some dads as well. Has this been your lived experience? Like, and you can send us a comment anonymously, of course, but it'd be good to speak to you. Have you found that you can't do your work or you can't pursue your career as you'd want to because of the cost of childcare? Let us know, 086 60 25,000. Well, a recent study found women are five times more likely than men to leave paid work due to such caring responsibilities. Now, top medic Professor Afif El Koufash has called for the government to boost paid paternity leave, currently just 2 weeks for dads, to help spread the load. But I think, I mean, that would be helpful. I think what we need, though, is affordable childcare so people can go out to work. Finally, I don't know whether to read this one or not, but it's kind of one of those stories. If you don't like worms or them inside people's bodies, put your fingers in your ears for 30 seconds. It's a horrible story. A worm 3 inches long was found wriggling in a woman's brain during surgery, to the horror of medics. In what is believed to be a world first, the parasitic round worm, usually found in carpet pythons, was spotted during a biopsy performed through a hole in the skull. Surgeon Harry Priyabandi said, "I just thought, what is this? What is that? It doesn't make any sense, but it's alive and it's moving. We all felt a bit sick." The 64-year-old patient then admitted to Canberra Hospital in the Australian capital after experiencing forgetfulness and depression. A year earlier, she had been admitted to her local hospital in New South Wales with symptoms including abdominal pain, a dry cough and night sweats. And it seems this little worm lived in her head. I'm not sure if it did for so long. The first of its kind, but it's the first that's been discovered. It doesn't mean it's the first ever, I suppose. Right, okay, let us discuss these electoral boundary changes. Well, there are no changes for us here in Donegal. We'll do so after we take a quick break. Bridie on Facebook says, "Good morning, Greg. Childcare is too costly. My daughter paid, I'll not say the figure right now, a month for her first child in Dublin. How much would you say they were paying in childcare? €1,300 a month. In childcare. How in God's name could you pay that? Maybe pay a mortgage and it'd be worth going out to work at all at all." All right, anyway, back to the Electoral Commission. With regard to the Donegal constituency, it was not possible to recommend the removal of the existing breach in its county boundary by the Sligo-Roscommon constituency. To have done so would have resulted in a variance of more than 12%, which the Commission considered too high. John McAteer, editor of the Tyrconnell Tribune. Look, there's a lot to digest, break down here, but first and foremost, it is still, I find it extremely annoying. It's a balls, as we might say if we weren't on the radio, that a slither of Donegal, South Donegal, is not going to be part of the rest of the county.
Unfortunately, and the reality here is that we were just that of the population of just over 167,000, to have two three-seaters, you'd have to be much closer to that 175, 176. We weren't going to get there, but there's a bigger problem than that, in that there's about 18 divisions in North Roscommon in the Sligo-Leitrim constituency to make up the numbers. So Sligo-Leitrim would be losing that Donegal vote entirely, because if we were to make up those six seats, we would need to get those areas north of Ballintra, Ballyshannon and Bundoran back. That, if we were having this conversation yesterday, we might have been calling it exactly as it is today. Anybody I talked to in the last week, and there's a big, big interest in it, mainly because people are very opposed to the idea of extra seats. But most people didn't see any real change. They saw changes predominantly around Dublin. But like for Donegal, the five-seater is one that we're going to have to live with for the foreseeable future. We've had it now in 2016, 2020, and now probably next year or the year after it. And it will work. Like the ratio of per TD is going to be 31,500 people. It was slightly over 32,000. So there's some minor variations in the south of the county going towards Sligo-Leitrim.
Yeah, we have this one TD for every 30,000. In Britain, it's one for every 90,000. So obviously they were going to stick to their guns on that. That wasn't up for negotiation, I presume.
It wasn't up for negotiation because it can't be under the current 1937 constitutional decision of Eamon de Valera to enshrine it in the constitution back in the day of when there was no communication whatsoever. There was hardly any travel to Dublin. The fact that it's enshrined in the constitution as between 20 and 30,000 with a minor variation either side of that is something that should have been changed long ago. There should have been a referendum on that. Willie O'Dea was talking about that rather belatedly last night. Michael McGrath is disagreeing with that, so we're going to have another 14 TDs come the next time. That would be utterly ridiculous. The numbers in the UK with their increased population, there's 119,000 people per MP, and there's a plan there. It was upset a bit by Brexit. There's a plan there to reduce that by 50, because with modern communications and all of that kind of thing, 174 TDs, it leaves it 29,573 per TD, probably the lowest in the EU. But we have to live with what we have there. I think the main parties will all be breathing a slight sigh of relief here that the county is not split up again, because the split would leave some rare breaches, because the population base is very much towards Letterkenny and towards Inishowen and away from the southwest. You could see areas up into Termond, Kilmacrenan almost, across to Yacca Bridge into Rathgill, probably in up to Cranford along Mulroy Bay. You could see areas around Fintown coming down into Glenswilly and Church Hill. But we haven't to worry about that this morning. All we have to worry about is that we're just in this situation where we, as we were previously. And as I say, the main parties, from the way I look at it, Sinn Féin will be happy about it because it leaves them on track with their plan to get three seats here. It's much more difficult to get two seats in a three-seater than it is to get three seats in a five-seater, if you know what I mean. Morning, Brendan.
Good morning, John.
Brendan Burns also with us. Good. We'll come to you in a second. I'll tell you what, we're going to talk about what the makeup of our constituency might be post election. There was national speculation that Donegal could become could be reunited, so to speak, and north and south, three-seater constituencies. I didn't get that sense on the ground. Brendan Byrne, are you surprised that the status quo has been maintained?
No, not one bit. The maths always indicated, if you were worth your weight in salt and doing analysis of the figures and the population of Donegal, and particularly when the Commission made it known, as they did, that they weren't going to go to the upper extent of number of seats. They made it clear that they were not going to go to 181. And once it went below 178 seats, Donegal hadn't a hope of being reunited, because we were well short on maths. And the only way we could be reunited into two three-seaters would be by taking in possibly up to a quarter or half the population of Leitrim. And no commission would countenance that.
All right. OK, so John McAteer, what will be the makeup? Well, we'll go through it party by party, I suppose. And then, of course, we have the 100% redress party, which certainly throws a spanner in the work for some potentially. So Sinn Féin got it wrong in the past. They went for three seats. It wasn't successful and they barely scraped two. Things have changed significantly since then. Can they return three TDs in Donegal? And if so, how? The incumbents, we'd imagine, they return. But where does the third candidate come from? Who is it?
It could easily be Gary Doherty again in the Fin Valley. Up in Europe area, Brendan, it could be Noel Jordan. It'll be in and around those two candidates, I would imagine. Given that they have a block of 45% of the vote there, 34...
Does Gary Doherty have the profile for it, John? And Gary's a fine gentleman, as is Noel, as everyone that's in this county pretty much. But strategically, that's what failed the last time. Does he have the enough core support there as a starting point? He seems a wee bit north in the county, for in my opinion.
Yeah, well, he's in the Fin Valley, Stranraer area. He would be well enough based. I think the last time he ran was just a bit premature. Sinn Féin had never voted for two or three prior to that, and it was a learning experience for them to convince their voters that there was a second and a third vote there, and. It probably backfired. Well, it actually did backfire on them. Things have moved on quite a bit for them since then. They didn't have 45% at that point. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael were both much, much stronger. There's a sentiment running in all the opinion polls, as Brendan points out there on the day that you were in Dunloe. There's a sentiment running in the opinion polls in favour of Sinn Féin, and it's ongoing and it's increasing. Probably the reason for that there is that the three-party coalition is not seen to be serving the people to any great extent. It's a sort of a steady as she goes. We have loads of money. It's not evident on the ground. It's not evident in childcare. It's not evident in the health system. It's not evident. The price of fuel is going up 5, 6, or 7 cents again per litre this weekend. We have a different dynamic politically in Donegal, and it probably is going to transcend itself nationally as well. Because nobody would be watching these results more closely than Shinners this morning. They'd have been worried about North Kerry there. Pat Daly would be hoping to bring in a second seat. I don't think he's going to unseat Danny Healy-Ray, but they would have high hopes of a second seat there. Those Dublin constituencies, there would be high hopes there of extra seats.
Yeah, for sure. There's a few interesting elements in that we'd get to. But in terms of a Sinn Féin third candidate, if she can be persuaded, and I don't know what the situation is at the moment, I mean, the logic that for me, if I were saying to them, you need to get Cora Harvey on that ticket. And that's no disrespect to Noel or Gary, but there's an awful lot of boxes been ticked there. And a great speaker, a very strong, I would say, a very, very strong candidate that I would see if they wanted to be successful, the person that they probably need to get in there. What do you think, Brendan Byrne?
Well, there's a few factors that are going to ultimately decide for Sinn Féin. One, they're going to have to do some polling to see how strong the MICA candidate is impacting on them. And once they've weathered that storm, they'll decide strategically where they're putting the candidate. And I would have to agree, a three-candidate strategy with Cora Harvey as the new addition to that would be by far the strongest Sinn Féin ticket because of her location. There's also the gender balance. It's very difficult for any party in a five-seater now to run three male or three female candidates for that matter. So there has to be gender balance there. But in terms of Cora Harvey, and I served with her on the council, she's a formidable candidate. She's very well located near the Twin Towns. And the other thing is, in a five-seater, the influence of the Fin Valley area, once you have the right candidate, is going to be significant because there's population growth there.
And of course, Noel Jordan wouldn't have the benefit of anything south of Leahy Ballantrae effectively as well too. He's from Mount Charles, which, you know, his natural hinter would be perhaps more southerly than westerly or northwesterly. John, what do you think of Porrig, Pearce, Cora, and listen, if Porrig were to struggle in Inishowen,
it would be the ideal ticket. Now, Cora Harvey has remained very much, as you know, Brendan, outside of politics at every turn of the road ever since she stood down. Where she goes now, what her career prospects are, these are all issues that you'll have to consider. Her family, we're assuming here that if you're going to run three candidates, one of them at least will have to be a female on the gender balance thing, and you can't avoid that. If it's not going to be Cora Harvey, probably it would have to be, well, I don't know how they would try to get around the regulations by running three of the one gender. I would see a female candidate, all right, for Sinn Féin. Cora Harvey, they're going to have to search elsewhere.
I don't think Marie-Thérèse, I'm not sure if she would be, I mean, she'd be very good. I'm not sure if she'd be interested. I don't know Marie-Thérèse personally, but that. Probably been
based in Dunloe, would leave it much too close to Pearse Doherty. Mm. It would have to be up in that Stranraer area or south of the gap, more up towards Donegal Town, more into your area, Brendan.
All right. Brendan, Fianna Fáil, what do they do? Because they are in a dilemma in terms of, I suppose, really how to get Charlie McConnellogue back in, really, rather than any aspirations beyond that. Tactically, how do they go about doing so?
Well, as you know, I can no longer speak for Fianna Fáil, but I would imagine Fianna Fáil...
Well, now you're even, you can speak even more freely now. That's the advantage.
I would imagine Fianna Fáil are considering this morning what exactly are they going to do, but... obviously, now it's quite clear that they're going to have to run two candidates, one in the Old Southwest and Charlie in the Northeast. So the question you're really asking me is, who is the candidate that's going to come out of the Southwest? And I think the candidates that would be looking at that position are, of course, Michael Nocton, who's very much south in the constituency. You have Anthony Molloy, who's Ardra Glenties based. And you cannot rule out Patrick O'Gallagher, who's probably the most busy of all.
Yes, but the person, if it were me, that would be most least in favour of Pat the Coke running would be, if I were he, Charlie McConnellogue.
Yes, well, I would have to say Charlie would probably be the best man to answer that. But the reality is, and I saw it myself when I was Director of Elections in 2011, if you get the strategy wrong, and that was when Mary Coughlin lost her seat, the strategy itself does more damage to you than the change in the swing within the electorate. So Fianna Fáil are at a critical crossroads here where they need to do some hard thinking about what strategy they're going to put in place. Charlie alone as a single candidate won't work. Charlie plus a weaker candidate will not work. Two strong candidates, Charlie plus another, may well not work either. So it's, I believe, you're going to have, depending on what Fine Gael do, depending on what Sinn Féin are going to do, you're going to have to put two strong candidates in that have good name recognition, good geographical location. The minister, McConnellogue, is taken as granted as being a candidate. So the choice is, in the south, do you put Patrick O'Gallagher, do you put Anthony Molloy or Michael Nocton?
But you put in Patrick O'Gallagher if you want your best chance to win a seat. He's seen by many still as a TD, even though he's not elected. If you chat to people, they'll say he's the busiest TD in the county. But that would perhaps put him as the number one candidate ahead of Charlie McConnellogue with everything that's going on. No, in terms of popularity, potentially, would he outpoll Charlie McConnellogue?
Well, popularity in itself won't win a seat for you. It helps to win a seat, definitely. But if you look at the last general election, much to everyone's surprise, the whole west of Donegal voted in a greater ratio for Pearse Doherty rather than splitting the vote evenly between Pat and Pearse, and that's what left Pat the Pope out. If that were to happen again, then you would have a repeat of what occurred in 2020. So even though Pat is a very strong candidate and he's flat out working and the entire constituency knows and appreciates that, there's risks either way. But I suppose if you're asking me a direct question, and you always do eventually, so I'm going to preempt that, who's the stronger candidate? Of course it's Pat the Pope Gallagher.
Okay. Of course it is, because like 7,500 votes sitting there. Where else would you get it? Fianna Fáil could count themselves very lucky to have a candidate. Is it going to be an age issue here? Or is he going to come up against that? Why should he? Like, if you're sitting on 7,500 votes and they're not going to be utilised, like, Brendan, you will know that a big percentage of that 7,500 votes are very personal votes for Pat the Cope, probably about 4,000 of them. Are you going to jettison that? Right. You're not going to jettison that in favour of running Michael Naughton or Anthony Molloy. They're both councillors, but they're probably not as well positioned or as well known as Pat the Cope. Anthony Molloy, definitely from football. Michael Naughton, those of us in the media know Michael pretty well. He's a good communicator and he's all of that. But has he that strength to get up anywhere close to 5,000-6,000? I don't think so. I don't think any other councillor is.
Again, he is very South Donegal, and maybe if the county had been reunited, his chances might have been more favourable. So, John, what is the strategy here? Is the strategy, if you're Fianna Fáil, to get Charlie McConnellogue back in or to get a Fianna Fáil person back in? And in both of those scenarios, how do you do it?
Their strategy, first of all, is to hold that seat. If they lose at Donegal, they'd be in a worse position than they were in 2011. It's just going to be as simple as that. They can't afford to lose Donegal. Let it be McConnellogue or Pat the Cope. They just simply have to get one seat because they are running at a very low ebb across the polls. Nothing exciting is happening to them that's going to increase that anytime soon. But at the end of the day, McConnellogue should be a strong contender. I mean, they're in a position of having a seat. It's very, very hard to unseat a sitting TD, especially a minister. And let's look at it like this here. Charlie McConnellogue has been firing money around every pier and harbour and slipway in Donegal. I see it down at Port Salon there, going flat out. They're spending a million and a half euro there. And up around Greencastle, there's massive amounts of money being spent on the marine. And now whether he's in favour with the farmers or not, it doesn't look good from that farmers' opinion poll a couple of weeks ago. He might fare better with Donegal, but that's going to be offset by the Mica controversy. He's been seen as being far too ineffective on Mica, and that's not a personal attack on him or anything like that. It's just a reality. Talk to anybody that has a Mica issue. They're not going to vote McConnellogue. So the question is, who are they going to vote for? Is there going to be a Mica candidate in there that's going to make any inroads?
Right.
Is there going to be a farmer's candidate?
We're going to talk about that because I do have to take a break, and hopefully both of you can stay with me. So does McConnellogue, is Charlie McConnellogue re-elected, John?
No.
Brendan?
Not yet.
Unless something drastically changes, is Charlie McConnellogue re-elected?
I would have to say, in Charlie's defence, he's a formidable campaigner. Mm-hmm. Now, I know he's at his lowest ebb because he had the Mica debacle and he had the farmers' issues, but he's a formidable campaigner. Who would have predicted in 2011 that he would have taken a seat against the tide when...
Well, no one did, actually.
Yeah. No one predicted a seat at all for Fianna Fáil. So I certainly wouldn't write Charlie McConnellogue off. And I think he needs to certainly focus on the constituency. I think he needs to focus on what he does well. He's a very good people's person, so he needs to get on the doorstep and he needs to get out there.
But like, you know, Brendan, as a senior minister, you're aware of the constituency so much.
Yes.
Europe is calling, national politics is calling, the cabinet is calling. Every other constituency in the country that has a farming vote is calling. So it's not that easy. Joe McHugh learned that the last time he just... barely scraped.
Well, so Páraic McLaughlin almost lost out too because he might not like this or not, but there was a sense that he was, you know, too sort of focused on what was happening in Dublin or elsewhere. So you have to be really careful with that stuff.
Well, like that was 2016 when he lost the seat. Mm-hmm. He was more switched in the last time. As I say, it's been a big learning curve for Sinn Féin, and it's going to be a learning curve for everybody again because... Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael will have to hold those seats. Thomas Pringle will be a fairly certain...
Well, yeah, John, I have to take a break. We're going to go to Fine Gael, the Mica candidate, Independence. Hail your horses there. Get a cup of coffee in you. We'll be back in...
Right, we'll do that.
Stay where you are too, Brendan. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. All right, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. A caller says, get Pat the Cope back. He's still done so much for us. Another, Councillor Gary Doherty, has done huge work for his community. He may do it more quietly than others, but he's always available and always helping to solve issues locally. I have absolutely no doubt of that, but it's about... you have a big county to sort of resonate with. Brendan, the one thing, if I was trying to come up with a strategy, a party, if they were inclined to ask, which they weren't, and I hope they don't, would be Fine Gael. What do Fine Gael do? Because, you know, they arguably got it wrong in the last election. Joe McHugh, I think he's even with the defective concrete issue, I think he is remains, you know, relatively popular, but he's not for running again. So, Brendan, what do Fine Gael do?
Take a hard reality check and sit down with Joe McHugh. I think if they have any fighting chance of retaining the seat in Donegal, it's with Joe McHugh. The transformation in Joe McHugh from, and John McAteer mentioned it, from the time he was minister to present is phenomenal, and he's connecting extremely well with the electorate. So Fine Gael need to take a reality check there and sit down with Joe and have that conversation with him, because I still believe Joe McHugh is their only hope of retaining a seat in a five-seater Donegal.
It's very hard to see any other pathway back that doesn't include Joe McHugh, John McAteer.
It's impossible, but then again, Joe McHugh has kept stating and restating that he's gone from politics. He's outside the parliamentary party. He has easily been popular when you're on everybody's side. If he's inside the parliamentary party, he's got to organise meetings. Fine Gael is in disarray across Donegal, from what I'm learning from talking to their grassroots. Fianna Fáil is probably not much better, except this is the difference here. Fianna Fáil have 12 strong councillors who hold and bind the organisation together. That's not happening in Fine Gael. Fine Gael needs a new beginning. They need new candidates. If it was Joe McHugh, could he be certain of holding that seat? Remember that as a senior minister, the last time he struggled, you know, away down there on half a quota. And that probably hasn't changed. The Mickey vote is probably not going to go to McHugh, because he was there during the period of Mickey, and he was there back in the government until last year. So, it's very easy being popular, as I say, Brendan, when you're, say, foot loose and fancy free, you're having to go to parliamentary party meetings. You haven't to go to constituency meetings. In fact, you're outside of constituency meetings. And, I mean, as a consequence of Joe McHugh's decision to remain out of the party, the probability here is that Fine Gael has also lost ground, and it has definitely lost votes. Mm. And, I mean...
But if he were in the party, we have seen it in the past and in this county where you can successfully ride two horses, you know, where you can be within the party and be... You know, be popular locally, and then you sort of a kind of a different person on the national stage.
You know, when you're heading into an election, say it's a year away or whatever it's going to be, you have to be very active and very proactive on the ground, and that can only come through your top representatives getting out and meeting the grassroots. That's not happening in Fine Gael. Isn't happening in Fine Gael to any great extent, because their grassroots don't matter anymore.
You know, we've been chucking it in there as to what impact the 100% redress party might have. Ali Farn is PRO of the 100% redress party. Are you going to allow me, Ali, to speculate about the general election? So you're going to say to me that we'll see how the council elections go first?
Well, as I said to you one other time, we're going to walk first. So we're concentrating on getting a party set up primarily at the moment. And we're far from there, but we're working on being ready for the county council elections next June. So that's a lot to do yet.
Yeah. Councillors
in place first.
Of course. And I'll ask you about your targets in that regard in a moment. But would you have preferred to have seen 2 3-seaters? That might have been better in terms of returning a candidate in a general election, or can you see it also doable in this 5-seater setup?
I think it might be more doable for us in a 5-seater, but. You know, numbers, it can change very, very fast. We hope to be very, very strong in coming out of Inishowen and Letterkenny for the general election if we run a candidate. There's most of North Donegal is affected. Mulford and all is affected badly by defective concrete blocks. So, we should be having a chance. It's a democratic country, and we should be entitled to run our run, you know, have a party that can speak for the people of that's affected by this. So,
do you see any sitting councillors switching to your party, or any conversations going in that regard?
Not as of yet.
Okay, but it's not being ruled out. We're not going to speculate on names, but
we'll have to wait and see. Look, there's so much to do and so much to build on first. And when we're ready to go, then we can talk. Right. And let's be fair, nobody's going to jump ship at this stage until we have, like, we have a forum in Dublin, and like we know things don't get happened too fast in Dublin. So a simple rubber stamp in Dublin is taking nearly 2 months.
And let me ask you, is there a target for council seats? And I know it's really early days, and I don't sort of want to... and if the answer's no, the answer's no. But, I mean, do you look at sort of Milford, Letterkenny in a show and say, well, could we do one each, two each? I don't know. Is there a...
Yes, we are talking about running people in each of them areas, but getting the right candidate that's suitable for... us, that is, you know, is what we, that ties into our way of thinking and our party's ethos will be our, you know, there's lots of good, strong people out there that probably haven't even thought about running yet as a candidate. And we want to be speaking to them in the near future, but we're not just right ready yet. And that's the only problem. We're not ready yet.
No, and that is perfectly fine. And that is why I do appreciate you coming on with us, Ali, and to talk about it. As you say, it's very early doors and waiting for that stamp. But I think these will be players in the next election. Thanks, Ali, for your time. So how big a role, and of course I understand Ali's focus being on the locals, but let's jump forward to the general election. John McAteer, how big of a role do you think a 100% redress party candidate will have in this election?
Difficult to know that one there, because like it's the most adversarial constituency in the whole of Ireland. You know, every party and everybody within that party, they're fighting separate campaigns. Doesn't matter what else is going on in every other constituency. Donegal will be very hotly contested. Sinn Féin is going to be bidding for three seats. Fianna Fáil will be thinking of holding on to one and hope on the outside to get a second one. Thomas Pringle will be a favourite with me. He has a solid base of 5,000-6,000 votes there. Popular man. There since 2011 through 2016 and 2020, so he has a lot of credibility built up there. Fine Gael probably is in a more difficult position than any of the other parties, so that's going to add a lot of intensity. They have just one councillor in any show, isn't it? In Johnny McGuinness.
Yes, yeah.
Jimmy Cavan is in Letterkenny. Martin Harley is in Stranorlar. And beyond that, they don't have an awful lot going for them. So as we talked earlier on there, they don't have a figurehead leading them in the constituency, since Joe McHugh doesn't have the party whip, and he doesn't have to go to party meetings, and he doesn't have to get out organising. So who's going to do it? I know that they have an area organiser based up in probably outside the county. I don't know to what extent that's playing into improving their lot. I'm just not seeing Fine Gael getting out of that difficulty that they're in.
I can't believe this hour is going in so quick. Brendan Byrne, what role do you think a 100% redress party candidate might have? And will their message resonate the further they move sort of, you know, south and west of Letterkenny?
No, it won't once you go through the gap, unless they can mount a considerable campaign, and you can't underestimate that they would, because it is a very emotive issue. But if you're talking about a MICA candidate, you must look at where the impact of a MICA candidate is going to be. And that's, of course, going to be on Charlie McConnell Logue. It's going to be on Padraig McLaughlin. So therefore, the whole third seat for Sinn Féin possibly is in jeopardy because of MICA. The only Fianna Fáil seat may be in jeopardy because of MICA. So that kind of addresses the issue that we should be looking at. And we talked about it earlier, the strategies of all the parties and the strategic decision they take where they put the candidates. It's the party that makes the mistake that's going to lose the seat. Mm-hmm. And this is going to be a highly strategized election. So the party that's best organized on the ground will, by default or other, get the bonus.
And of course, then to John McAteer, there's going to be other strong candidates. Mary T. Sweeney has aimed to backing her. She's going to be running in the elections, I am sure.
Her message will resonate with an awful lot of people. She has high profile.
Yeah.
But there's probably going to be a farmers candidate from what we're gathering as well up in Inishowen. We talked there about, you can look at this and sectionalise it. To come out of Inishowen, Letterkenny and Mulford, you're going to need the guts of 7,000 votes, because the Mica campaign is going to dissipate south of the gap and long before that. Yeah. But it's not beyond the bounds of reality that that can be achieved, but it's going to be achieved at a big cost there, both to Sinn Féin and to Fianna Fáil. I'm not too sure exactly to what extent the Mica campaigners have put a strategy in place, because you're going to have to organise in every single area if you're going to get votes. That is a big ask.
But they are the most impressive I think that that's going to be very important for them is social media. And their reach on that, and how they can organise in that way, and how they strategise it. Because you know what? It could be a protest vote for some as
it
well.
It could, but you know, like at the same time, Mica is a huge following, it has a huge campaign, because it's an independent, free spirited organisation. It doesn't have a political base. But once you politicise an issue, then you could see splits developing there, because not everybody that has Mica in their home is going to be a Mica candidate, or not just going to be a Mica voter.
Councillor Jack Murray.
That's a big, big issue.
Councillor Jack Murray of Sinn Féin, your reaction to the Electoral Commission. Do you think it makes sense to retain Donegal as a five-seater?
No, I think it's a very disappointing decision. I think Donegal, since partition, I think has been a forgotten county in favour of the Eastern Seaboard, and particularly Dublin, and the population of the Dáil is weighted in its favour. I think we could have done with an extra voice in the Dáil for Donegal. I think we should have taken back in the likes of Ballyshannon, Bundoran, completed the county boundaries, divided into two three-seaters, and I brought that extra voice for the county when it's needed more than ever. Now, you're talking about the defective block crisis. Like, if we had that extra voice in favour of Donegal fighting in Dublin, I think it'll make that struggle a bit easier. So I think it's an opportunity missed today, particularly for those of us in Donegal in the North West.
All right. I wish I had more time, Jack, but unfortunately I don't. Thanks very much for that comment. And both of you, finally and briefly, Thomas Pringle, you'd be confident of him retaining his seat?
Yeah, quite confident. I would see it from this distance out. I would see it as Sinn Féin battling for three. Thomas Pringle, it's hard to say that anybody's a safe bet, because there's no such thing. Thomas Pringle would be in there as always. He's the most transfer friendly candidate in Ireland.
So three Sinn Féin, one independent. Where does the last seat go?
You'd have to toss a coin on that one.
Well, no, you don't have a coin. You've got your head, John.
I would call that for Fianna Fáil, actually.
Pat the Cope Gallagher or Charlie McConnellogue?
If Pat the Cope's running, I'd call that for the Cope.
Okay, Brendan, would you see three Sinn Féin?
Yeah, I see three Sinn Féin. And three candidates then for the remaining two seats. And if you look at 2016 and 2020, and you can't go and ignore the facts of that, Thomas Pringle survived in both those elections with a sizable transfer from Sinn Féin. If Sinn Féin run three candidates, which they are going to, where does that transfer that he has lived on in 2016, it elected him, 2020, it got him over the line again. If Sinn Féin tighten their vote, they'll take the three seats, and the other two seats will be between Thomas Pringle, a Fine Gael candidate, and a Fianna Fáil candidate. With possibly, if Fianna Fáil organise themselves, they could, by default, possibly have two in the run.
Brendan Byrne, thank you very much indeed. I just kicked him out then off the back of that comment. Joking. John McAteer, thank you. Take care. Bye-bye. Loads of you messaging, texting in. We're going to get to all of your comments after we take a break for the news.